This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fine.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of PTBN Clotheslines and Headlines. I am co-host JT Rosero, coming with you live here on this Wednesday evening. And as always, I'm with my cohorts. One likes to grab people by the hand and walk them into a nice comfy place in their life, and that is Steve Willey. Steve, how are you?
I got that one.
You got that?
Yeah,
we're already off to a better start than we did last time.
Yeah, so I am on key right now. I'm on point even.
You're locked in. Your Cubbies are in the World Series. Can you believe it?
No, it's not even real to me.
Is it? I know it's. Let's get our other calls, and then I got a question for you, the Cubs fan. Nate Milton, how are you, sir?
I am doing good, my brother. And as a special public service announcement to the people out there, to our audience, whatever you do, please stop chanting Steve Willey's name. You're just pissing Brock Lesnar off.
And it pisses us off, too. It does. Steve, as a Cubs fan,
yeah,
you've got to the World Series. But is it like the most Cubs thing ever that somehow, some way, and I'm saying this as someone who's completely neutral, this kind of a more likable team on the other side? Like, did you ever think you'd be in the position where you're not really like, I feel like the Indians have kind of usurped like the lovable underdog of this playoffs. Do you feel that way?
I do a little bit. And I think that making it to the World Series this year wasn't as big of a moment to me as if they would have done it in like 03 or 98.
Right. Or it's not really a surprise. They were kind of built.
Right. They were picked to make it. And it's still like wonderful. I'm not going to lie. I shed a couple tears when I was sitting at home by myself watching. But it's true, and this is not like a typical NL team. It's not a typical Cubs team. It's, you know, based on power and starting pitching, which generally they'd have one or two stars and maybe one pitcher, and it was, you know, just some, you know, good team chemistry and a good team small ball type stuff that would get them far if they ever made it far.
Yeah, so it's so weird because you would have thought all these years, you know, like if they ever made it, they'd clearly be the favorite of everyone. You know what I mean? Unless you're like a Cardinals fan or whatever. But I mean, most people would think that had no dog in the fight would be rooting for them. But I've seen, you know, more and more people seem to be favoring Cleveland. You know, it's odd. It's just funny.
I've seen some people hate on him, and I'm like, how? That I don't understand. And maybe it's a little bit of rose colored glasses. I understand that, like White Sox fans, some White Sox fans might not enjoy them, or Cardinals fans. But
well, I think White Sox fans are pissed because, you know, they're acting like this is like the first big, big moment in like Chicago World Series history when the White Sox were just there in 05. Like, I saw a lot of White Sox fans kind of getting pissy about that.
But that was a big deal, too. I mean, I think they forgot that. That was a huge deal when the White Sox made it, because outside of the Bulls Jordan run and the one Bear Super Bowl win, there had been nothing since the 45 Cubs made it to the World Series, like at all. There was like one Blackhawk season in the 60s. So that was a huge deal for when they won.
Yeah, it seems. Regardless, let me ask you this now. Do you think, is it a real big kick in the dick to lose to the Indians? You get there, and it's like these two loser franchises with this history of losing that haven't won anything, and you're the loser of the loser matchup. You know what I mean? Like, is that worse than, like, say you had made it and we're playing, like, well, I guess the Rangers have never won either. The Red Sox, will say, won recently, the Yankees, Kansas City, who won last year. You know what I mean? If it was, like, a team like that, would it feel less, or is it going to feel shitty either way, or, like, the fact you made it this far and then you lose to the fucking Indians breaking their streak make it even worse?
For me, I think I'm a little bit more pragmatic of a fan. I try to be try to take some of my emotions out of it.
Right.
But the only thing I have against the Indians is their stupid logo and Napoli's neckbeard. Besides that, like, I love Lindor. I think he's very talented. My five-year-old and I watched the Play Ball show on MLB Network, which is like geared towards kids. He was the first guest, and I was like incredibly impressed with like his work ethic and like the, you know, just the way he was kind of teaching kids on the show, like what kind of attitude to have when you're playing. So I'm a big fan of him, and I think I might have mentioned to you, like, I hope he gets like 25 hits and doesn't score any runs.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting. It's a Cubs are up right now in game two. So we'll leave that there, and we'll truck on, because there's a lot of stuff to cover this week here on Clotheslines and Headlines. We're going to, of course, talk about the big news, the major shocking news that shook the world, the arrival of Flow Slam. We'll talk about that. I'll tell you, it kept me entertained. I was traveling for work on Monday, and it kept me very entertained throughout all the airports and planes and layovers and everything else following this mess going on. So we'll talk that. WWE, of course, we'll cover previewing this weekend's Hell in a Cell. We have to talk about Goldberg's big epic return promo and Brock Lesnar's follow-up this past week. We'll shift gears to TNA, of course. We have the big Billy Corgan TNA Dixie Carter injunction hearing that went on today. So we'll talk about everything going on there. And then our favorite guest, Chad Gamble, will be on later to do a little tour of Japan. We'll talk some New Japan, some Noah, some Dragon Gate, some All Japan. So we'll run the gamut over there in the land of the rising sun to wrap things up. But on Monday, fellas, so I guess, I mean, it really all started Sunday night when news began to leak, or word began to leak, that a major news story was coming on Monday that would shake up the wrestling world. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation as to what it could be. Was it going to be talent cuts? Was it going to be some kind of merger? And then word came out that, no, it sounds like it's going to be some kind of streaming service, or some maybe WWE, you know, purchasing another company. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on out there. Right? I mean, one we even saw said WWE was buying Lucha Underground, which was crazy and absurd. But when word finally came out Monday, it was the creation of what is going to be called Flow Slam. And Steve, you have some, I don't say.
Welcome to my. Right.
That's Kiss my right. Creates.
You better play that whenever they fire up that channel on Roku or whatever your device is. So, Steve, you have a friend who's got some info on what the Flow world is. But it's going to be basically a streaming app. It's going to be $19.99 a month. It's going to feature wrestling from around the world of indies, right? I mean, that's pretty much what it's going to be. It sounds like there's going to be some live pay-per-views on there as well. As far as we know right now, no TNA, no WWE, no Ring of Honor. WWE is a minority stakeholder in this function, in this program, but they are not going to actually be airing anything on it, as far as we know right now, either, and they really have no say over the product, too. So, Steve, what do you have from your friend, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, WWE, they don't own any part of it. They're just an investor in it, so they just have some money in it. But so basically, Flow Sports, which is the parent company, came around a few years ago to try to start showing and airing the lesser college sports, the lesser known high school sports. So I know of it starting through track, where they would go around and do timing for the different events. Basically like a national company that they can hire out to be a little bit more like the timing and the point system be more authentic than just random Spanish teacher with a stopwatch. So then they started streaming some of the events. And as I even did some research on it over the weekend and yesterday as the story broke, or Monday when the story broke, they have extensive sports coverage now. It's not just track and field. You got gymnastics, you got amateur wrestling. I think there's some MMA stuff, even cheerleading. And they have the live stream component, which they will do live streaming of multiple events during a day. So my background is in track and field and cross country. It's what I ran and coach for a long time. And so I went back and saw that, like on Saturday, for instance, they had three cross-country meets that they were live streaming, which takes place over 5 miles usually. So not an easy thing to televise. And from what my friend says, who has been involved with Flow Sports as a coach over the years, their live stream has been impeccable. Their coverage of events is better than the major networks because they can afford to do more of a deep dive because they're serving a niche customer base. So they're going to go cater more to the hardcore fan, whereas like in an Olympic event, instead of just, you know, talking about the one American person in the event, they can go and deep throughout the entire roster and tell their stories. The other component of it is that they archive everything that they show. So there is a video on demand component, and it sounds like with the wrestling, they are already starting to do that. We can talk about who is on it in a little bit. And the thing that my friend likes the best about it is their extras. They have already said on the wrestling part that they're going to do documentaries. And he said that their documentaries are exceptional. They even have like coaching techniques that you can do for each sport. So I don't know if they would actually do that for wrestling. The only problem that I don't understand yet, and I'm trying to figure out, is whether or not if you pay for one of the sports, if it opens up the whole thing. And right. I've heard mixed parts about this. If you have wrestling, does that mean you get the amateur stuff, the MMA stuff? Do you get the gymnastics? You get the track?
I don't think so. It seems to be like this flow sports and then this flow slam. Like, I think there's probably going to be packages. That's what it seems like.
Yeah. Like almost like a, you know, like your sling gimmick, like the, right. You know, have multiple or any cable channels or cable programs. Like, you'll have different tiers perhaps. But their advertising on that, if you go to each sport and look at it, it's very misleading.
Right, right.
So it doesn't really say either way. The language is very vague.
So it was announced yesterday that, or Monday as well, that Flow Sports is announcing a 5-year partnership with World Wrestling Network Live. And, of course, their streaming partner, and it will now be part of all the properties that are with WWN Live, and that is Evolve, Shine, Full Impact Pro, and WWN Super Show. So those, at least, programs or companies will be part of this. Have you guys seen any other ones leak out as far as who's going to be signed up?
The only thing I saw was there was a screenshot that they sent out on Monday, and it was like a picture, I think it was like Cena and Orton or something like that, and they showed, I think, Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, and Ring of Honor Final Battle on it. But I think that was just a, I don't know what you would call it, like a practice screen or something like that. Just right. Something that...
Because nothing's show. Come out yet that they're going to air WWE pay-per-views or Ring of Honor pay-per-views for sure.
And why would WWE let them show pay-per-views? Because wouldn't they want people going to their own network?
Right, that's cheaper.
Yeah. Cheaper so it'd make no sense. So, why they would...
Well, I guess, I mean, it depends if they're, you know, if they're investors, maybe they'll make money off it either way. So they figure, whatever, if someone wants to pay the higher price point, they must get some kind of percentage. I'm sure it's not the full, you know, what they, as far as much as they make on their own network, but...
Right.
I mean, they figure it's better than someone not ordering at all. So FlowSlam users can access all live streams and premium content on the site via monthly $20 a month introductory price or annual $150 for the year Flow Pro subscription. Annual subscribers to FlowSlam also receive a universal pass to all premium content across the network, including Flow Wrestling, Flow Grappling, Flow Combat, Flow KO, Flow Rida.
So, and Flow.
Right. Aunt Flo, yes. So, yeah, it seems like there will be different kind of packages and options. Nate, what do you think about this? Did this rock your world like everyone had predicted? Or, I mean, do you see it as a big deal when it comes to the future, when it comes to consuming wrestling? Or is it just more white noise?
It's interesting because I think the concept is a good one. My big questions are... exactly what role does the WWE play in this? Because right now it just sounds like they're a silent partner, which I don't know how that benefits them unless, you know, it is another avenue down the road for them to pump their product out to the masses. Another thing that intrigues me is the price point, because I think in a pre-network world, $20 or even, you know, the $150 annually, I think that's a hell of a price. But when you've got a lot of the masses that watch the network that are conditioned to pay a certain price point for what is perceived to be higher quality wrestling, even though, you know, that's subjective, I don't know if a lot of people are going to bite on that 20. But I do like the idea and the concept, because this is where things are moving now. You know, there's a lot of companies that have, you know, on-demand services. The NWA, I know, is one of them. But to have this this setup, I think it could be cool. I don't know what would make this different than, say, the Fight app, you know, that you can get on your phone. Mm-hmm. And watch, you know, Ring of Honor or some of the other companies out there. But I'm intrigued, at least. You know, I'm not opening my wallet saying take my money, but I am listening.
Yeah, the $20 price point's interesting because you're obviously going after a subset of wrestling fans, right? I mean, you're going after fans that are really aware of these companies in many ways. So that unless you have that hook of WWE that may draw new fans in, you pretty much know your target audience. It's people that were either interested or buying, you know, DVDs or streams of these companies in the past. So you're already targeted there. So I guess what you have to ask is the 20, so you can't even really compare it to the network, right? Because it's just, to me, it's a whole different set of people. So your comparison point is really what they were spending before on these live streams and DVDs. So if you were spending $5 on this or $10 on an Evolve and, you know, $15 on a DVD. So I think that is where the math actually comes in more than, you know, on the surface, you compare it to the network, but it's not really the same audience that they're going after. It partially is, but not fully.
Well, see, that's another question, though, because, like, if I'm a Shine fan and I watch Shine every month and I'm only paying, you know, I don't know how much Shine shows run. Let's say 10 bucks. Let's say I'm paying 10 bucks a month to get my one Shine show a month. Does the proposal of having Evolve or some of these other companies on there that I may not be interested in, is the hook of seeing something new, is that worth an extra 10 bucks a month?
Well, I think if you're an Evolve fan, and there's some people who are big fans and they do like two shows a month, generally their price point, I believe, is 20, 15 or 20, somewhere around there, depending on when you order it. So then it's a no-brainer,
right?
To do it. But if you're not, it's going to strictly depend on what else they get. Because, you know, the only thing that I signed up is at this point is WWN Live. And, you know, I don't know, like AAW, which is another big, you know, independent right now, PWG, they already have their own deal with High Spots. Chikara has their own network.
Right. I saw, I think, today that PWG said they're not going to be part of it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, what is the point besides WWN Live if you're not that kind of fan? Now, if some of, like, your English promotions hop on there, then it would be a great deal. But again, some of those have their own YouTube channels now where they charge a monthly fee. Mm-hmm. So if they can get $9.95 for their stuff, why would they go and get some small percentage unless it's going to expose them to a greater audience? And the only way they'll do that is if they see how it works.
Right. I mean, I think the mindset's going to be similar to WWE, right? I mean, they have the network and they continue to use pay-per-view because there are people who just don't want to adopt the network that wanted to stick to pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, part of it there as well is that there are going to be people who want to just still order the DVD. And like Nate said, if you're only into Shine and you don't want to pay the full. So maybe it's just additional income stream. I mean, I think it is good for the wrestlers, too. I mean, that's probably going to trickle down to them financially. And at least appearance wise, they'll get more, you would think, more eyeballs on their work and more, you know, notoriety that way. So I think there are definitely positives to it. And I don't really see many drawbacks at all. You know, I don't see, unless it's too expensive, that's the only thing I think of. But, like, the idea, the concept behind it, to me, doesn't seem to really, I don't see, like, anyone saying, this is stupid. I think, you know, there are people saying, you know, maybe it's a little too expensive, or we'd like to see, you know, so-and-so. If Ring of Honor's not there, it's not worth, you know, like, you see stuff like that. But, I mean, why not? It's clearly the future. You know, and if it's a thing where they struggle at first and then they keep adding more and more promotions, and, you know, part of the question that'll come into is the libraries, right? So you mentioned before, Steve, they have archives. So how, you know, how deep into the library do they dig on a lot of these promotions? Do they bring in the archives of their entire run? Is it just stuff that's new that runs on there now gets archived? So I think that plays a role too. I mean, if all of a sudden you're talking that you can get Evolve's full back, you know, library, you know, maybe that makes it more enticing to someone that's just on the fence because they don't want to just pay that much for whatever, You know, so I mean, if you're opening it up, if you think of all the podcasts and all the websites and people who do reviews and everything else, and now, you know, $20 a month, all of a sudden you're getting tons more content to review or discuss. You know, maybe then it's worth it. If it's just strictly live new programming, then you wonder the worth.
And they have talked about. Oh, go ahead, Nate.
I was just gonna say it's really like you said, a niche product, and content is key because, you know, I hate to keep putting these guys over, but I just opened up my phone and I'm looking at my Fight TV app right now, and I can watch ROH, I can watch TNA, you know, I can watch boxing or MMA, and that's completely free, you know, unless I choose to pay for something on the app. So it's almost like this is obviously something that is forward thinking, but maybe it's happening a little bit too late in terms of the way people have been conditioned to pay for the content.
Yeah, no, if you know, in terms of the niche product, if they throw on all the international track and field stuff that I try to watch anyways and struggle to find, I'm all in. If it's just Evolve, while Evolve is good, there are plenty of other streaming services right now that I'm already intrigued by that are less expensive, that have virtually infinite amount of stuff that I will never be able to watch all of it of.
It's funny, and I don't know if it's in a good way or a bad way, that WWE, I mean, you could argue they pretty much have a monopoly, but they do like the opposite of price gouging. They've actually fucked all these other companies by going so cheap, right?
Yep.
I mean, most times a company in their position would say, well, fuck you, we're the only game in town, you know, $40 for our stream. But they went the exact opposite and now have killed everyone else, because everything, whether right or wrong, is going to be compared to them. And you even heard it when Ring of Honor started charging whatever it was, $50 for their pay-per-views. You're like, oh, I can get, you know, WrestleMania for $10. Why am I going to pay $50 for Death Before Dishonor? It's like, well, thanks. You know, like, thanks a lot, Dodie. You know, you could have at least gone $20 maybe and helped us out. But, I mean, there's going to be a large base of fans that just won't even consider something like this because they're like, I have everything I need with WWE. I mean, think of a guy like even Scott, you know, Steve. It's like, I mean, yeah, big time wrestling fan, diehard wrestling fan, but I mean, this isn't really in his area of something he cares about. I mean, he's a guy that spends like a decent amount of money on wrestling, right? Goes to live shows, buys merchandise, spends on the network, gets DVD. I mean, he's involved. Right. He's booked. He's involved. You know, he loves wrestling and spends money on it. And this is something to him, you know, in his mind is completely out. Yeah, he probably wouldn't even consider the $20. But if it's $8.99, $10.99 a month, you know, maybe he checks it out.
And if you want it for the year, it's about $12.50 a month. It works out, I believe.
But that's a commitment. Like, I mean, you know, how many people are going to buy that year? Especially at this point, to me, anyone who buys the year on day one makes no sense. Unless you're just a diehard Evolve fan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to kind of see what it grows into. Does the stream work? You know, it's like. Mm-hmm. I mean, there weren't a lot of people bought. I don't remember if it was even an option when Dodie Network started. I think you could do, the six-month thing, right? And even that, people worried about that, like not trusting it. So, and it's not a great rep for a lot of the stuff. Think of all those ROH pay-per-views that had all those issues. And I know your buddy said that it's pretty reliable, but...
Right. It's been around for a long time, but... how often did we hear that with, like you said, ROH, with the online stuff? Evolve was the dirt worst for the longest time. I mean, it's actually a running gimmick now. Like, how's the stream with Gabe going on Twitter and asking that? And Chikara had problems. The Go Fight Live app, they would do well on some things and not well on the other. And it depends a lot, too, on the buildings and their internet capabilities. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm more intrigued and think this is going to be more positive, because if they're capable of pulling off live streams out in rainy, muddy golf courses somewhere in the dead of fall and winter, I think they're going to do a little bit better with indoors at the old the beer hall or the rec centers.
Well, and you're not just talking about, you know, the practical aspects of a broadcast or a stream, you know, even though the three of us and most of the listeners probably are used to the modern newfangled technology. There's still a technology gap that I think a lot of people are catching up to. And I think, you know, when we talk about the network as an example, I think it took a while for them to even kind of catch hold. And they're the biggest game in town. So when you still have a lot of people who are buying traditional pay-per-views through their cable providers, or you still have a lot of people that are wary about the fidelity of some of these streaming networks, And then you add onto it the component of, hey, this is a product that only appeals to maybe 25% of your audience. And I'm not saying that to be hateful or to throw shade, but just in terms of who's really checking for the Evolve or the Shine. And these are great promotions. And I dig what Gabe's doing and I dig Shine, but I'm the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. You know, you're casual wrestling fan. These promotions might not even be on their radar. So it's a risk. I think it's an intriguing risk and one that I hope pays off just for the sake of the business. But, you know, there's a lot to be seen.
It goes on to say, too, and we've said it here before, that WWE was ahead of the game with a lot of this stuff. I mean, I saw an article today, I think Scott Keith linked it, that some website did like the top 10 streaming, well, you know, options, and WWE Network was number 5, and they've stayed the course and fought through. And you don't even hear, I mean, I never see people bitching about the connection anymore. Do you guys like you know, how it the stream will go down, or even at pay-per-view nights, I feel like you don't see as much of it as you used to. So it seems like they've steadied that ship a bit, and even the content they keep dropping too. So I think they've kind of finally figured it out, and this stuff takes time. I mean, the worst thing Flow Sports can do is overreact to initial feedback. They need to measure it. They need to stick with it and not panic. You know, it seems like they've been doing this for a while, so they need to just kind of stay the course and let things play out and not panic early on.
Yeah,
because I think for Flo particularly, Steve, and I'll toss it to you. I think particularly when Flo is looking at this, they need to remember that the streaming world is a wild one.
Mm-hmm. And you have some fickle wrestling fans out there, as we know. I mean, even with the announcement that you talked about at the beginning, Justin, you know, every single person had to get their 2 cents in on what it was going to be.
Right.
And everyone had their inside sources that weren't even remotely close to reality.
Right.
I mean, Wig Collar.
Hey, as long as they broke the story, that's what matters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. You throw enough stuff at the wall, eventually something's going to, you're going to be right once in a while.
Yeah.
I love mixed metaphors.
All right. Why don't we take a little break ski here? And, of course, we failed to mention this is our 10th episode, guys, so we should be celebrating here tonight. 10th installment of Clotheslines and Headlines, also our Halloween episode. So hopefully you enjoy the Halloween music in and out of each segment. And when we return, speaking of Halloween, we're going to head into hell for our annual Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with the WWE. We'll preview that. We'll talk a little Goldberg, and then we'll move along from there. So we'll be right back.
It's close to midnight. Something evil's lurking.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
All right, we are back here on the 10th episode of Clones, Lines, and Headlines, and it is time to talk a little bit of WWE. And, of course, they do have their big pay-per-view coming up this Sunday night from Boston, and that is Hell in a Cell 2016. Hell in a Cell itself has been around for 19 years, the concept. Pay-per-view started, was it 2010, around there, I believe? Anyway, or Mayo's 09, something like that.
Hey, I'm not Chris Golo.
I know, right? Go dig through the shell. Figure it out. So I thought we'd go through the matches here, levy some predictions, some thoughts, what we think will be match of the night like we usually do, and then we'll pick it up from there. So announced today is a pre-show match, guys. The Cruiserweights getting a little bit of shine. I like this idea. I know it may look like they're shoved to the pre-show, but there really isn't a pre-show anymore, right? It's not like it's the free-for-all or the preview show. You know, where it was on TV Guide Network. It's basically the fucking show at this point, right? I mean, it's like, what's the difference? I mean, you're watching on the network, you're there. If they wrestle at 7:40 instead of 8:00, is it really? Do you guys feel the same way at this point?
I have absolutely no problem with it. It doesn't bother me in the least. It's on the exact same channel. It's on the exact – there's as long as I get a nice payday for those guys, it doesn't bother me at all. Right. It did bother me a little bit more at SummerSlam being there live just because they spread them out so far away.
Right.
So as a live audience, it was a little off-putting. But I think it's a nice spot for them to get shine on a pay-per-view. I really hope – We talked our cruiserweight stuff earlier a couple episodes ago, but I really, really hope that they give him more than like the 5 minutes they've been giving him on Raw. You know, let him go 10, 12 minutes, and you know, they have a whole hour to kill, so go right ahead.
And it's a good six, too. Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado, and Sin Cara versus Tony Nese, Drew Gulak, and Arya Davari. So it's, you know, it's a good mix of talent. You get Cedric out there. You get Nese, who's been kind of a favorite of many people. You get Gulak, who everyone loves. So, you know, it's a good... a good mix. And Nate, what do you think of the match? And also, what are your thoughts on kind of, is it really, like, to me, the pre-show is just the show these days. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's part of the program. And I don't have a problem with them putting this match there. My bigger issue is with the treatment of the cruiserweights overall.
Yeah.
Which I think is a larger problem, that they now feel like, you know, just this kind of sideshow. And just from a booking standpoint, and I don't know why, you know, he wasn't one of the six. You'd think that Rich Swann would be a part of it, coming off of, you know, the big win over Kendrick.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's not, because he's going to play a role in the match.
It could be. But yeah, that's my only problem with this thing. Not that they're on the quote-unquote pre-show, but just I don't think they've done a good job at establishing this division thus far.
Right. I mean, they're giving them 3, 5, 7 minutes when what got them over on the Cruiserweight Classic was giving them 10 to 20 on each single match. And they have 3 hours, you know? They can do it.
They do. But I'm kind of okay even if they get 7, 8 minutes. I mean, WCW, they killed it with Cruiserweights going 7 or 8 minutes. Like, it's just the way they're positioning them on the show. Like, they're sticking them in the slot, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes into the show. You know, like, everyone's done by that point. The whole point of this, and they're doing it right on the pay-per-view, is open things up. Let them get the crowd involved and get going. Let them fly around. Like, by that point in the show, and I don't know if in their mind they're thinking, well, you know, we're putting them later because we see them, you know, as being worth that slot. But to me, they should be opening the show, getting things fired up, not just being buried deep late in the last hour, and no other storylines. They just keep throwing random six men. At least, like, do something where may the wins mean something. You know, like TNA was starting to do with that series. Like, at least pair them up and make them mean something. If they win, they pile up points and get title shot. Like, if you're not going to have angles besides the main title angle, give them a reason to be fighting instead of just rolling them out in six mans as exhibitions every week.
Yeah, or at least starting the show with them would make more sense just from a practical standpoint, because – you know, they wouldn't have to break up the flow of the show by changing the ring ropes and all that other stuff. You know, you could just start the show with the Purple Prince ropes.
Right, exactly. You know, Purple Rain. Start it early. were you going to say something, Steve?
No, that's actually what I was getting at, too. Okay. But you got to let them get their stuff in, too. That's, you know, let them do what makes them different. Don't turn them into a regular WWE match when they're doing the 5 minutes and, you know, throwing on chin locks. There should be no chin locks in these matches, especially a six-man. It should be nothing but nonstop action.
Let them fly, baby. Let them fly. All right, so I get to the main card proper, and that, of course, we'll start at the bottom, and then we'll work our way up to the top, and we'll start with Bayley and Dana Brooke in a singles match. Of course, this is kind of an offshoot of the Charlotte-Sasha antics that have been going on. Bayley, you know, kind of lost in the shuffle, I guess, by design. She came up at a good time, but kind of at a bad time, because the main feud was never going to involve her with what they had going on with Sasha and Charlotte. So, you know, they're biding time with her, but due to the way the division is constructed, you couldn't just kind of win match it. You know what I mean? Like, she kind of had to do what she's doing. They couldn't really have waited any longer, though, with her on NXT. So they were kind of stuck. But here she is feuding with Dana. I think Bayley takes this one pretty easily. Steve, you're kind of the resident Bayley maniac. How have you felt about her booking so far? And then do you think she wins this match?
Well, I'm confused because you said you were starting from the bottom up. Isn't this the main event?
Bayley has the best bottom I can think of.
I'm a little bit disappointed in that. She doesn't seem special. She can be on the, you know, the lower card. I mean, that's where she came from in NXT. She started on the bottom and worked her way up. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, after Charlotte and, you know, Paige and Emma got her shot and
Emelina.
And Sasha, you know, she was kind of one of the last ones. Becky got a shot, but she got called up pretty quickly. You know, she was the last one to make it to the top. So I see that that's what they're doing here. However, like, you know, she needs to get the crowd behind her. You got to, again, tell her story, make her the underdog and show that she's the underdog. But I do understand that, you know, she's going to get there. She's not going to go against Kevin Owens in the first match and win the Universal title.
That'd be a hell of a match.
Yeah.
By the way, if Emelina doesn't use a ripoff of Gasolina by Daddy Yankee as her entrance theme, I'm going to be very disappointed. Nate, I thought you'd like that one. Oh, okay. I feel better that day we lost him. You there, Nate?
I am here.
All right. Looks like we lost. Okay. No one. We're all on. So you just no-sold my joke then, Nate. Thanks. Go
no, ahead. It clicked out for a second, you know?
So you didn't hear my Gasolina joke?
Oh, no, no. Right. I imagine it was glorious.
You're though. You're up. What do you think of this match?
I think this kind of falls into what I was saying with the cruiserweights, where you have something special in Bayley, but with the way she's being presented, she kind of feels like another run-of-the-mill character on this program. So I don't know. Like, obviously, she couldn't be a part of the main event, but I think there was another way to utilize her that might have been better. I would have gone personally back to the Nia Jax feud from NXT.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been my way to go, but they didn't, and so we're stuck here. We're stuck in the middle with Bayley and Dana, and Bayley should win. But because that makes too much sense, I think Dana's going to win this, and we keep this feud going for some reason.
Oof. Oh, God. Dana really, I mean, she was doing really well with Emma, who, of course, is going to be known as Emelina. Nate, what do you think if Emelina used a knockoff of Gasolina by Daddy Yankee as her entrance theme? There you go. All right.
I had to hit you with that Tony Atlas.
I think the Dana Brooke definitely seemed pretty at home, just kind of being like third dog behind Emma, who was like second dog in the heel side. I know it was kind of good in that mid-card role. And then when she got shifted to Charlotte and all of a sudden is in the main title picture of the women's division that's getting all this hype and all of a sudden the spotlight's on her not to fuck up and she just keeps fucking up. I think it really, you know, did her zero favors to be put in this position next to Charlotte as a bodyguard. I mean, it's you know, if Ric Flair wasn't such a drunken jackass, he would have been so good with all this, Steve. And I know we had talked about it in some of our chats, like, how much better this cell match would have been with Flair. Like, I actually, was it Glenn that mentioned that on the show, I think, a couple episodes ago? How awesome this would have been if Flair was outside, you know, flipping out outside the cell and, you know, maybe he's even hanging his own cell or something. Like, like, it would have been so much better. But, you know, instead we've stumbled through the Dana stuff and it's just, it hasn't helped her. And in some ways, she'd be better off maybe even doing like a fake injury angle if Bayley, you know, whatever, finds a way to tap her out and hurts her or something and let her go to NXT again and rehab and maybe eventually come back with Emma. Just something to mix things up for her because she's just snowballing on her right now and she can't seem to get out of the way of it.
And she was when she was in NXT, she was the alpha. You know, she wasn't anyone's bodyguard. She would talk down to the other announcers. She talked down to all of her opponents. She wasn't like the side piece, as it were.
Well, she may be, but
I set that one up nicely for you.
Yes, but yeah, her and Emma were a good package, but for now we'll see. So
quick though, the thing that makes me scratch my head is they were building something up with Dana and Charlotte, and they didn't even pull that off right.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
like if you're gonna go through the trouble of pairing the two together, then the ultimate payoff one would assume would be Dana somehow finds a way to even bungle up a Hell in a Cell match, costing Charlotte, which leads to Charlotte, you know, verbally or physically kicking the dog. And then Dana gets the big Virgil, Ted DiBiase, you know, servant gets their retribution. And that's Charlotte's next feud. But they didn't even do that right.
How do you spell woman? Dana.
Oh, can you imagine Dana coming out with the little candy stripe pants?
As long as she's got that Virgil music and Emma uses Gasolina. But if they do, the problem with this feud with the women and everything else is they've had to treat this women's division and Diva Revolution, whatever the hell it is, for the last year, is such a big thing. And we talked about this before, how they treat it like it's they can't just talk about the stories. They have to reference everything in this reverence of, this is the first time we're doing this. Mm-hmm. The women are main eventing Raw. The women are going inside a cell. The women are going to maybe have a ladder. You know, it's like they have to hype it so much that they can't just do standard stuff. So it's like, this is the first women's match ever in a Hell in a Cell between the two top women on the roster. It may even main event the show. So it's like, all of that, you can't have Dana fuck it up. Whereas the storyline is calling for Dana to fuck it up. You know what I mean? So it's like, they're stuck because you can't have Dana. I don't know. I mean, they could, but to me, like, this has to be the way they execute that match. We could talk about it in a few minutes, but the way they execute that match has to be clean down the line moment because of how they built it up.
And I think that's part of the problem. I don't know how you feel about it, Steve, but, you know, they spend so much time talking about how this is historic and talking about how mm-hmm. this is some great revolution when most of that work should be done between the ropes, in my opinion. You know, I think it's more impactful if these, you know, much like the X Division in TNA back in the day, you know, they didn't spend time before it got rolling telling you how great this thing was. You know, it was only after we get, you know, Styles and Daniels or that great three-way at Unbreakable. They're like, hey, this is what you got to watch. This is like nothing else you're seeing on TV right now.
Well, they kind of did. They just, it was just NXT, right?
Yeah, they
not on the main roster. NXT, we saw the matches on NXT, and that built the legend, right? Is that kind of what you're saying?
It was a little more organic on in NXT. And I don't remember in Brooklyn, the first Brooklyn, Bayley and Sasha was the second to last match. I think it was the Iron Woman match that was the last match in Full Sail. But they, they didn't make as much of a hammering at home. And that's kind of typical Raw Michael Cole announcing, though. Like, you have to say exactly how many days that it's been since whatever champion has won the title. And you have to hammer each point home 2-3 times a match. And then you will have one or two inserts of graphics where they say the exact same thing. They feel like they keep need to resetting the audience every 15 to 20 minutes. And I think people are smarter than that. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but I think they get it. It's all over social media. It's all over their websites. It's said several times a show. If you let it go and just let it grow naturally, you have Charlotte and Sasha going the distance, switching the title back and forth. You know, you could tell the matches have more to them than the other women's matches previously, or even the other women's matches that are going on concurrently.
You know what? As good as Charlotte and Sasha has been, because I have liked a lot of the build for this, I think it'd be so much better if the team over on SmackDown was handling it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Because they found a way to, like, if you just compare the two women's title matches, Charlotte and Sasha versus Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss, like, on paper, there's no question which one should be held in more reverence. But I got to say, I might like the way that they built Alexa up better than what they've done with the girls over on Raw.
I think the bigger problem is not everything can be on SmackDown. You know, it's like everything we want to like, we say, the cruiserweights, I wish they were on SmackDown. Although, these women, I wish they were on SmackDown. I mean, what makes SmackDown great, I guess, is that they don't have all this stuff, right? And they're still able to pull it off.
Right. They have the less time. They have better, writing. And they can do that same thing on Raw if they really wanted to.
All right, let's work out.
SmackDown's the main event. They're the better show. They're shorter, and they're the lead into Chrisley Knows Best. So Tuesday
they
night,
even stole that from Raw. It's so tight, the booking, and you can tell stuff's laid out, but they're not afraid to veer off if they have to. It's like, it's just such a nicely booked show. Like, everything just makes sense. It's an intimate group. You know, you kind of know all the characters, and you know what they're all doing, and you know, it's just, I mean, even this James Ellsworth stuff has been insane. But anyway, we maybe touch on this in a bit. We still got some more matches to cover here. We can quickly
We're
move.
Going deep dive on Bayley Dana Brooke.
Right. We can quickly move to this next one. Enzo and Cass against Gallows and Anderson. They've tried to rehab Gallows and Anderson a bit here. They've given up on kind of the goofy stuff. Enzo and Cass need a win. I mean, they went from being molten hot to just almost forgotten, it feels like, over the past few months. You know, I'm not the most loyal Raw watcher where I'm not dialed in, but it seems like they haven't really been focused on. So I'm all for showing off your depth and having tag matches across the card, not necessarily all tag title matches. So it's cool that they have a slot here for a non-title tag match. And I feel like both teams kind of need a win, but I feel like Enzo and Cass need it more because they're worth more. Like Gallows and Anderson are just Gallows and Anderson at this point. You pretty much already committed to the fact that you don't really give a shit what they do. So to me, you know they see some money in Enzo, or at least definitely Cass. So I think they get the win here. What do you think, Nate?
I agree, because I think that while Enzo and Cass are not nearly as hot as they were, that entrance still gets a reaction.
Right.
And that's more of a reaction than Gallows and Anderson have gotten since they've been separated from AJ. And I think the thing that hurt them the most might have been the Finn Balor injury, because I think had Finn not gotten hurt, there would have been some interaction. I'm not saying he would have been paired with Gallows and Anderson, but I think they would have been involved somehow in his storyline. But because they're left to their own devices, they're just another tag team. And they're a good team. You know, I really like them, especially Anderson, but they're just another team. And without AJ, without Finn, without any type of guiding force, there's nothing that really separates them from the Ascension, except for the fact that they don't look like idiots. So I'm going with Enzo and Cass on this one.
Enzo and Cass. Yep. Pretty much what everything said. And I have honestly never been a Gallows fan. Anderson's a little bit better, but even in their New Japan stuff, a lot of it, which I've caught on Access when they've done it, to be honest, they really didn't impress me that much there.
Yeah. I mean, they had a window, kind of like what Nate was saying with the age. I mean, they had a window. And it closed. So I don't know how they get rehabs or rebuilt outside of just putting the Bullet Club in some form back together at some point. But for now, I think that is depth.
Yeah, that's how they got over, I think, in people's minds. Is like, oh, they're part of the Bullet Club. They must be great.
Right.
And I think we're hitting on a recurring theme here, at least for the first couple of matches. Things that were great or had a lot of hype. And then as soon as they got to Raw on the main roster, after a couple months,
Yeah. That's pretty much the whole show. And that continues here, maybe, with Cesaro and Sheamus taking on the New Day for the Raw Tag Team titles. Of course, if you remember, they went to a draw in their best of seven series, and their prize was getting teamed up into a unit, and they get a title match. I think there's two ways this can go, win or lose, right, John Madden? But no, I would say either they win and get the titles, or one of them turns on the other, right? So it's one or the other. One thought we've seen float around some of our circles, Steve, has been, you know, Sheamus screws Cesaro and then they have a loser leaves Raw match, and that finally gets Cesaro free of Raw and over to SmackDown where he can be better utilized. I don't know, though. They love their tag team champions that don't get along bullshit. So it really wouldn't shock me if Sheamus tries to turn on Cesaro and Cesaro still wins the match and ends New Day's title reign.
And I'll give him this. This is one of the most compelling storylines that they have going on, I guess, yeah. You know, right now on Raw, because we don't know what's going to happen. I've been one who thought that Cesaro might be a guy who goes over to SmackDown after Survivor Series. Perhaps SmackDown side wins, and he seems to be one who's been floating around, and I can see him having some great matches with AJ. So I honestly don't know who's going to win this one. I'll pick Cesaro and Sheamus because, haha, it's wacky.
I mean, I'm going to go with New Day because they're in my John Cena rule right now, where you pick them until they lose. But I kind of see – I had forgotten a little bit about the Survivor Series stip, right? So what is it? The winning side gets to draft a few people over?
Yeah, that's a best of three Survivor Series challenge. I think it's a tag team, 10-on-10 tag team, 5-on-5 men, 5-on-5 women. Whoever wins the most matches gets to draft three people from the other side.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to have Cesaro and Sheamus end the tag reign, and then one of them goes. And I see no reason why Cesaro's not going to SmackDown. They've even, like, mentioned it. You know what I mean? Like it's
right.
been
it's
part
been a
of story the
storyline since the beginning.
Yeah, so I think he's going. So I'm going to say that they probably lose here then, and they just do the split-up angle, and then whatever. Maybe Cesaro even turns on Raw at Survivor Series and helps SmackDown win, and that's how he gets drafted over. But what do you think, Nate, of this one?
As Steve mentioned earlier, Michael Cole is the dean of the day planner, and he reminds us of all these milestones and these landmarks. And, you know, for those that have been watching, the New Day is getting close to Demolition's record.
Yeah.
And I don't think they keep mentioning that without
right.
either letting them break the record or having them lose just before they get to the record.
Right.
And so I think they retain here. And I think Cesaro is probably going to get drafted to SmackDown after Survivor Series. But if not, the only other way I see this being something that actually turns a positive benefit is if we get a Cesaro heel turn.
Right.
And we finally get the badass tag team challenges that Gallows and Anderson were supposed to be in, Sheamus and the newly heel Cesaro. But if that doesn't happen, I easily see Cesaro going to Team Blue.
Yeah, I think it seems like a no-brainer just because, like Steve was even saying, I mean, they pretty much have set, I mean, it's been the angle. So, but anyway, let's continue to move on here. Next up, a match we can briefly touch on because we talked a lot about the division earlier. That's a Cruiserweight title. TJ Perkins, your nerdy video game loving champion against Brian Kendrick, the angry veteran stalwart who asked TJ Perkins to throw the match for him in a very weird segment on Raw. This whole feud started off really well and has gotten really not well. So Perkins, again, hasn't really been made to look great. They've put him in a lot of positions to talk, and for some reason they have him talking like Bart Simpson all over the programming. And I'm talking like 1991 Bart Simpson, this like straight up cowabunga dude. And then Kendrick, who was kind of getting over as this wily heel guy on his last legs, basically crying in the fucking locker room, asking TJ Perkins to just let him win. Like, none of it makes sense. Like, unless they reveal that he's just trying to get in his head and TJ feels bad for him and then he rolls him up. I mean, that's the only way to me this works. And I think Kendrick wins on the fact that Swan beat him on Raw, so they're already kind of setting up Swan as a champ, as a challenger. And I don't know. I think they've soured a bit on TJ. Like, and it's not his fault. They just haven't really set him up to succeed. I think they've kind of fallen in love with the Kendrick story, and I think Kendrick wins, and I think he does it. I'm going to give him a little credit. I think he preys on Perkins feeling bad at some point and rolls him up. Like, Perkins has kind of no-sold everything he said so far, so maybe they do one more skit, like on the pre-show or something, or an interview before a backstage, you know, skit before, where he asks him one more time, and maybe he breaks down again, and then sometime in the match, Perkins is going to have him beat, and he feels bad and stops for a second, and then Kendrick rolls him up or hooks him in the lock and wins it. And then we get Swan and Kendrick from there. What do you think, Steve?
Man.
Yeah, and that is the one thing I've really liked about the reemergence of Kendrick over the last year or two is his super crafty heel stuff. That's what made him stand out in the Cruiserweight Classic, like sticking people's legs between the stairs and stuff and the ring barrier. And if it almost feels like he's trying to portray that character in spite of what they're doing
right.
for them. Like, I'm going to, try to do my best and seize this time and get my stuff over, my character over, that is. Isn't this like what we thought was going to happen? Like, we say from the very beginning when we had a kind of a deep dive into what they're going to do with the Cruiserweights, they kind of took everything that was great about it. And, we don't need TJ Perkins talking. You need, TJ Perkins telling us who he is, where he came from,
right?
Why he's going to turn this division upside down and impress everybody. You don't need to have him do guest commentary.
No, have him do sound bites if he has to talk. Quick hits, not this.
Yeah. If the point of the Cruiserweight division is to make it look different and, then don't follow the same, same old storyline stuff.
What do you think, Nate?
Well, this past week on Raw, we saw that these guys, tried to reset their relationship, but I guess they had to pause. So I'm going to start right now, Steve and JR, and select a winner. Is that enough video game references?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mario, Luigi, Zelda, Duck Hunt.
NBA Jam.
Boom shakalaka, Nate. I love your predictions.
Adventure Island. Hudson's Adventure Island. How about that for a bit? There you go.
Now I just want to go play video games.
Great game.
And watch old Simpsons.
Simpsons video game.
Oh, yeah.
That's my Butterfinger, dude.
This whole thing makes no sense, because I need somebody to tell me, to explain to me where the logic is with Brian Kendrick. And I'm not saying that he isn't portraying this character to the best of his abilities. I'm not saying it's not entertaining at points.
You could say he's earned some extra lives.
But his whole conceit of, I need to win because this is my last chance, and if I don't win, how can I feed my family? To my knowledge, and I've been watching Raw as much as humanly possible, which is no small feat, nobody said if he loses, he has to leave or he doesn't get paid.
He doesn't get that championship money.
I mean, he's not going to get the winner's share at the pay window, if you will.
That's Skrilla.
But he's still going to get a minimum wage WWE salary.
Not enough to feed his family, man.
Like, I would have liked it better if we had had, and all it would have taken would have been one backstage scene. And we know they've got plenty of time for backstage scenes. For him to walk up to Stephanie and Stephanie be like, you know, you've lost a couple times. You know, Raw is a place for winners. I really need you to win, or we can't keep you around. Boom. Now we've got motivation.
And it feels like it's a poor man's ripoff of the, no pun intended, the poor man's ripoff of the Heath Slater stuff on SmackDown. You know what I mean? Like, and look at the difference. That was fleshed out. We got into it. We met his family. We understood his plight.
Yep.
And it's like they think they can do the same thing by having Kendrick just say it in a promo. You know what I mean? It's like there's such a glaring difference between the two right there. And the thing with Raw, Nate, you hit on it. It's like they seem to have so much time for everything, but no time for anything. Like they have all the fucking time in the world, like 3 hours and 20 minutes every week. And somehow they can't fit any of this stuff in that everyone's always saying they should do. Like, I don't know. Where does the time go? Like, what is it used on? It's so odd.
Like this past week, I counted. There were like 5 segments backstage with Jericho looking for his list. We couldn't use one of those to right. establish, you know, TJ Perkins or your man Brian Kendrick. So, yeah, I haven't been happy with the way that they've gone about this story and the division as a whole. But Kendrick should win. I mean, they put stakes on this match that weren't there and didn't need to be there. So by the story they're telling us, Kendrick should win. And I'm a TJ Perkins fan, but I think he's going to drop the belt.
I think so too. All right, let's get to our big matches here, our triple main event. We're going to start with those women, and that's Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair, who all of a sudden now is being called Charlotte Flair again. Mick Foley, a promo to forget on Monday, and I get what he's going for. The problem is we've heard the promo like 10 times since 2000, and it was kind of shooting in the foot what they were trying to go for, like, here's why you women need to be careful, you know, and for someone who's creepily obsessed with the women, it was weird coming from him.
So you said he went from Mankind to Mansplain?
Mm-hmm. He sure did. He went from man hard on in his pants over the women to Mansplain. But this, that didn't do anyone any favors at all, that segment, the contract signing. And I'm fearing that they put so much hype into this, it can't come close to paying off what they're trying to do, right? I mean, they've hyped it and hyped it and hyped it. I mean, the pressure at this point has to be insane that these women are feeling. And now you wonder if they're going to go do something real stupid because of it. It's just the hype machine behind it. And, you know they want it to go well so they can showcase it and sell how they've, you know, set aside the women and put them in the sale and all this stuff. But, man, the build and the pressure is pretty crazy. I think Sasha has to win, obviously. I mean, you can't keep trading the belt back. At some point, you got to do something different. So I think Sasha wins here to end this feud for a while. So I'll ask you guys, A, who wins? B, do they do a crazy bump? And then my other question is what's going to main event the show, but we'll talk about that at the end. So what do you think, who wins, and do they do some – what is like the level of crazy bump that they do, Nate?
I think Sasha wins because she has to, and – I'm hoping they don't do any crazy bumps, but something that looks pretty good and is relatively safe. I could see them going to the top of the cage and Sasha winning with a bank statement on the top of the cage. So just a simple move, just elevated.
Right.
Like your Jericho, was it Jericho Benoit when you put the lion tamer on top of the ladder type deal?
Yeah. And even there's been other finishes too, that are, like Triple H pedigreeing Jericho on top of the cell at Judgment Day or whatever. Yeah, so something like that where the finish is on the south, so it looks dangerous. But they don't actually break through or fall off or anything.
Right.
Insane.
Throw Charlotte off the cage into a truck full of hay.
Yes.
I think Sasha makes the most sense to win. I think it's not going to live up to the hype that the WWE is giving it, but I think it's going to live up to the expectations that we as fans have, which is like, hey, it's, you know, going to probably be a decent match, but, you know, not like a five-star classic. I think everyone's fear is that, you know, a couple times Sasha in these big matches have done dives or she almost landed on her head and killed herself. I don't know. I think they're going to have to go up on top of the cage to make it stand out. Otherwise, it's going to be another just random Hell in the Cell match, I guess. I have a lot of fear about this pay-per-view in that Hell in the Cell matches lately have just not lived up to those of the past. And especially when you have multiple on the same show, you have to do stuff that's different to set them apart. And now that you have three, I don't know. Good luck.
You know, too bad Rick isn't involved because you could have Charlotte fall off into a truck full of bushes. Yeah. All right. So this, they're in a tough spot, man. They're in a really tough spot. And it's, I feel like they're putting so much hype on it that, I mean, they could go out and have like a five-star match and people are still probably going to be disappointed. And think of the matches they've had already in the past. Like, you know, well, like, what more can they do possibly do? Yeah. It'll be interesting.
I hope that we can, before we move on, I hope that, you know, some of the more like, you know, kind of like the Twitterati of wrestling can get past the fact that Charlotte's pretty darn good now. She, you know, she was kind of raw when she started, no pun intended. And she's getting to be the face, one of the faces of the company. You know, they throw her out in all the ads.
She's on SportsCenter tonight.
Yep. And, you know, she's been one of the forefront of the tap out commercials. And
yeah, she's their ace right now. I mean, not mm-hmm. Sasha. Like, Charlotte's their ace. But the good thing is they have like four other options to be the ace. So, I mean, I was watching WrestleMania 23 earlier today and the WrestleMania match on that card was Melina versus Ashley. You know, I mean, it was awful. Like, I mean, just brutal.
Speaking of Mick Foley.
Right? So they've come a long way. All right, let's talk U.S. title, Roman Reigns and Rusev. Rusev's been amazing, as always, him and Lana. The king of social media, the king of gimmick, everything, just so, so good. Stuff with his parents on the pictures was so funny. And this feud's been pretty good. I feel like if it was anyone not named Roman Reigns, they'd be getting more love if they're doing the same exact stuff. But the brawling's all been good. The heat's been good. You know, Reigns is your champ. Rusev still hanging around. I think Reigns wins. I don't think they're going to give it back to Rusev. But no, I'm feeling this one. I'm looking forward to maybe this more than anything else on the card. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, this has been the best built feud out of your three big matches. And Roman retains, much to the chagrin of Mama Rusev and the rest of the Rusev clan. But, yeah, this has been really good. And I think they've done a good enough job of keeping heat on Rusev and not allowing him to turn babyface, because it would be so easy for him to flip. Because he has been entertaining, and we know how the crowd is hot and cold with Roman Reigns. But they found a way to keep this guy menacing and to, if not make you want to see Roman Reigns win per se, to make you want to see Rusev get some comeuppance.
You know, Justin, I actually agree with you here. I actually agree with you a lot, but I do think that this has been like great brawling. Rusev has been outstanding in this role.
Those sideburns.
Yeah. the stuff at SummerSlam, which kind of got put down, I actually thought it was really enjoyable, like just a massive brawl. It didn't have to go anywhere. It's not like, you know, the SummerSlam is the pay-per-view blow off anymore. The stories can keep going. I do think Roman's going to win. I hope that this is the Hell in a Cell type match where it's just straight up brawl inside the cage, throw each other against the wall, scrape each other's faces against the steel, you know, just a beat each other up type match.
I'd like to see Rusev get drafted to SmackDown, too. I think he's kind of done with Raw. Him and AJ could be fun. Him and Cena is always good. Him and Ambrose, you know, they have a good chemistry. I think it'd be a good change for him. Even Lana, like the women on SmackDown, kind of could use her more. Like she's really never going to do much on, you know, if they ever try to make her active or get her involved with the other women on Raw. Like she just fits better on SmackDown. I think they'd be awesome on SmackDown with more, a little more creative liberty. Like imagine Rusev on Talking Smack. Like that'd be unbelievable. All right. So did you go, Nate? I'm sorry.
I went with Roman.
That's right. All right. And then our main event, Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship. Kevin Owens, guys, everyone loved him last year. He finally wins the world title. I feel like people are kind of tepid on him. Is it the booking? I've seen people say he looks beaten down out there. Like, I don't know. What do you think? Before you get to the match, how do you think his reign's been going, Nate?
Not good. Not good at all. I think a lot of that, though, has to do with the challenger. Because I think they've done a piss-poor job of baby-facing Seth Rollins. Like, he is... he's less likable as a babyface than Roman Reigns, if you want to be honest, just going off of what we've seen on television.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Triple H involvement with how Owens won the title, like I didn't have a big problem with that, like some people did, but I think the issue is not following up on it. I think, you know, when you just have this big moment and then the dude that was the catalyst for the moment decides to take the rest of the month off, it's like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. So I think there's a lot of factors in terms of why Owens really hasn't gotten over to the level that a lot of us thought he would at the top spot. But they're going to have a good match. I mean, I think it's be almost impossible for these two to have a bad match. My issue with this, and it's something that I think we might have talked about last time, is I don't think this match needs a Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
I think it might actually be better without the cell. So,
I guess the argument is Jericho, right?
Feels like Hell in a Cell. You know what I mean?
I guess the argument's Jericho, right?
To keep him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think quality wise, they definitely don't need it.
And it's obvious that Jericho's going to be involved somewhere because he's not on the card everywhere else. So they're totally telegraphing that.
I don't want them to break up, though. They're so good together. Like, I don't know. Jericho's just such a renaissance.
Should we just like switch to like a 90210 podcast there? I just really don't want him to break up.
Just don't break up. Don't break up.
But no.
Don't choose you.
Just think how great the Survivor Series is going to be if we get Jericho Owens.
I know, but no, don't. So good.
Or hold it off to Royal Rumble, you know.
Mania. Just let it go to Mania. They should finally break up. One of them eliminates the other in the Rumble or something. You know, like, let it go to Mania. Last. It's so good. Just last. So we all obviously think Owens retains.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So with that said, let's talk this. What closes the show? Now, have they? I don't think they've said for sure, right? I mean, Foley said the women were, and then he walked it back, and now they've never actually come out and said what is main eventing the show, right? I've seen rumors that Reigns of Rusev's going to do it.
Ooh.
This is a rare case where I think any of the three matches could be the main event, but because of the hype they put on this match, I think we're going to go cool in the gang and it'll be ladies' night.
I said this last episode. I'll say it again here. You've come this far. Let's let the main event the show. You don't have you don't have Goldberg Brock on this card. You know what I mean? Like you got the room, you got the card to do it. Why not just look at the matches? You know, like Owens and Rollins, really fun match. Not really a match that like you have to have closing the show. Same goes for Reigns and Rusev. You're never gonna have a better opportunity than you do right now to just do it. So just do it.
Right. And what's the point? I mean, even in the poster, they're on top of the poster. And you had Jim Ross also congratulate them for main eventing the pay-per-view as well a couple weeks ago. So if they don't do it, then people are going to be like, oh, you know, they're not high on Sasha and Charlotte anymore. They're burying them. So I feel that at this point, why not? It's not a pay-per-view. You're not going to be paying extra for it. You can, we've said this before on the show, you can experiment with these shows and with the order of things and with the way the flow that has been, you know, kind of stale for 20 years. Mix things up and try new things and see what works, see what gets the fans excited. That's why I wasn't, you know, we didn't really get to talk about it too much after the last show. But, you know, with the No Mercy thing, you know, with leading off with the three-way, I know it was for the debate purpose, but hey, it was something different, and I applaud him for it. I actually thought it was kind of fun to start the show off of that. It got me pretty hyped.
And this will be the rare occasion, at least in the WWE, where we get that feel-good hometown win to close the show.
Mm-hmm. Yep. True. That's. I mean, you're right. In Boston, Sasha's hometown, so another reason.
I thought Cena was going to win for a second there. Wait, what are we talking about?
It's still May.
He'll come out at the end and end up winning the women's title.
There you go. May as well.
He's like, does this count for 16?
I'm taking it back for Nikki.
Then Big Papi will come out and they'll inject each other and then go home. Come on.
Yes. That's one room for the Indians. Sorry, Steve. They ended Big Papi's career. I can't really
get rich.
But Big Papi was there with Chris Bryant today.
Fuck him. So Raw vs. SmackDown, we touched on earlier. To me, SmackDown's clearly still been dominating. And actually, one last thing on Hell in a Cell. Match of the night, just real quick. My pick is Reigns and Rusev.
I agree. That's the match I'm most excited for, which if you would have asked Steve Willey 2014 version and Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins remain, you know, essentially main eventing a pay-per-view in a cage, I would have like been so incredibly excited. But Roman and Rusev is where it's at for me. I think it's going to be a great match.
Well, I'll be contrarian and make us all have three separate answers and go with the ladies. I think this will be the match where they step up and hopefully, you know, Lord willing, they don't do anything too crazy. But I think the crowd's going to be into it, and both of them will step up and rise to the occasion.
All right. So Raw and SmackDown. SmackDown's, to me, been the dominant brand since they did the split. This talk now, or it seems pretty official, that they're going to do a similar show to Talking Smack for Raw. It's supposed to debut Sunday night after Hell in a Cell.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm not excited about that.
How long is that show going to be between
right?
their pre-show, a 3-hour and 20-minute Raw, and then what, another 40 minutes for that show?
And they have good talkers like Jericho and Owens and these guys, but it's just, I don't know. Like, they're not going to have Daniel Bryan going rogue, that's for sure, because he's been unbelievable. I mean, he was shitting all over everything last night. He made fun of, he said, you know, over here, you don't just get titles handed to you by Triple H. You know, like basically just shitting on everything. He's a loose cannon on Talking Smack, but it's just the vibe, the look, the feel of SmackDown. Like Shane McMahon, I mean, I guess to her credit, Stephanie hasn't been too overbearing, but Shane's like barely really on. Daniel just kind of runs things. You don't really see him a ton. The commentary's coherent and cohesive. The stories are well told. You're doing like classic stories. Like this Ellsworth thing has been so, you know, old school, classic and vintage and well done. And it's just there. It's not overwrought. It's just there. You know what I mean? Like everything's just so succinct. You know, they have it. It's very territorial feeling in how small the roster is in many ways. You know, like I said, you kind of see everyone every week, but it doesn't feel like it's over the top that you see everyone every week. It's just a really good, old school, high quality program. I mean, it's really like NXT graduated. I mean, that's what it feels like in many ways.
Yeah, and to me, the credit for that goes to the writers, you know, the guy they brought up from NXT. And I like SmackDown. My only gripe with them still is depth. And I think that's something that'll be resolved after Survivor Series.
Right.
And I think, you know, they're the more compelling show. You know, when you got somebody like AJ Styles, who still is one of the more interesting people in the entire company, when you've got this women's division that is better than it has any right to be, given the experience level of most of the performers. You know, when you've got a tag division that's fun, when you've got commentary that somehow found a way to make David Otunga passable, you know, this is a much more digestible show for the viewer. You know, it's not bloated like Raw is. So I think SmackDown does everything right. And the thing with Talking Smack is you don't need to watch it to, you know, get what's going on with SmackDown. But if you do, it's this extra added bonus. And I think it's something you look forward to. Whereas a Talking Smack copy knockoff on Raw, it's like by the end of those 3 hours, man, you don't want to watch any more damn wrestling.
Right.
So I don't
you don't
think
live.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be as successful, both for the reason that I don't think the audience is going to really want it, and B, I don't know if that writing team will have the grapefruits or the lady balls, as Stephanie McMahon would say, to kind of let these guys and girls go out there and wing it as freely as they do on SmackDown.
No, right. Definitely.
And, I think Daddy Mac's not going to let that happen too, since his fingerprints are more over that show, I would assume, than SmackDown. But I think just to wrap that part up, like in terms of talking Smack portion, they say they want to make the two brands completely distinct and different and have them stand out on their own. Let's copy the exact same programming right. style that they're doing and bring it over to Raw.
And they'll do it shitty. I mean, they'll do it just yeah. like we said the other thing. And you know what's a big thing about SmackDown too? AJ fucking Styles is like the best. Like he's awesome at everything. So it's like that's such a big. Raw has a lot of good guys, but AJ. The big difference with AJ is he's fresh to the world of WWE, and so he's new, and like everyone's learning about him still that didn't know a lot about him before, and it's just everything he does is so refreshing, like this dorky confident heel thing he's got going on that is just awesome in the ring,
and as good as he is as a heel, like there's so much more money to be made when they flip him, and I think this is
stop trying to flip him. I'm done with you trying to flip him.
It's gonna happen, and it's a lesson that Ross should have learned, Well, they should have learned it beforehand because everybody was telling them that. But with Roman Reigns, like just because a guy is a heel, it doesn't mean that, he's not somebody that the fans cannot gravitate towards, So I think if they had given us 6 months of Roman Reigns as this badass heel, that flip, whenever the flip came, it would have been so much more well received than his current incarnation.
Agreed.
Just kind of reflecting back on AJ Styles as we were talking here, like when did he leave TNA, Nate? What year was that? Was that 12, 13?
Let's see. This is 16. So, yeah, I think it was 13.
So, in 13, 14, 15, 16, guy has pretty much been a top guy. I know he was more of a special appearance guy in ROH, but TNA, ROH, New Japan, WWE in just that short amount of time. He has made those four companies so much better. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's we extol his virtues all over these podcasts, but I can't imagine anyone else in history who's had that kind of effect over that many companies in such a short period of time.
Yeah. Well,
and at this stage of his career, like it's not like this is AJ at 28 or 29. Right. This is AJ at an age where, quote unquote, he should be slowing down.
And that's why I'm so happy that they're taking advantage, because he doesn't. Who knows how many years he has left, and they're just going with it. You know what I mean? They didn't let him, waste away in NXT, or they made him work his way up a little bit. But I mean, by the spring, he was like 3 months in. They finally, okay, time to strap the rocket, let him go. We'll do year end awards, in a few weeks. But to me, he's easy wrestler of the year in my mind. I mean, he's been unbelievable. We'll turn and speaking of kind of bad or ill-fated turns back in the day, Goldberg was one of them. And just really quickly before we wrap up this segment, how shocked on a scale of 1 to like 100 were you on Goldberg's promo? Because I'm at like a 205 with how shocked I was with how amazing, how the moment just, crackled in the air, like how into it the crowd got and how wrapped up. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. I was excited for him. Everyone else was kind of tepid about Goldberg coming back. And I don't know. He delivered, man. He went out there and the story was easy. I want my kid to see me be great. I think, Steve, you had said that 2 weeks ago. I want my kid to see me have one last match and fuck you, Brock Lesnar. And on the flip side, Brock's appearance that seemed very haste on Monday. Even Heyman joked on Twitter that it's pretty much like a trash bag promo he cut. in the wrong spot in Minnesota, you get the crowd now chanting for Brock there. Word is that Vince McMahon was pissed off at everything that followed from that. So it's been a weird 2 weeks, but Goldberg, man, he's back and everyone's fired up.
Well, I think I'll price is right you and I'll go. I was at 206. I'll beat you by one. I think what made that so special, it reminded me of the Warrior stuff right before he passed, where it was, it wasn't, it was, fairly unscripted in terms of how he reacted to the crowd, and you know, kind of humble to the effect of like, wow, how do these people remember me? And then when he just, I guess being a father and stuff too, like seeing him react with his son and just like start hugging every single kid that was, in the audience. And I think he even kissed one kid on the forehead, just a random kid like on the aisle. And it actually, like, I almost brought this up earlier, but knew we were going to talk about Goldberg. And like, that's what Bayley should be doing on Raw.
Right.
That's what she was doing in NXT.
She should kiss every male in the crowd.
Exact same thing that Goldberg was doing, you know, lifting up kids. And, but it was just, it was really cool to see. And it was something I did not expect in the least. I thought he was just going to come out and grunt a couple times and challenge, Goldberg or, Lesnar and say, you're next. And then fireworks, fireworks, fireworks. But it just
I'm ready for the Goldberg title run, man. Let him beat Brock and go to WrestleMania. What do you think, Nate?
And then boom out of the building because then right. Return them.
Yeah.
Of course. You can't like a guy for more than 3 months.
I thought it was great, you know, and they hit everything right, you know, from using his old WCW music when he came out to the crowd getting into it to the damn mayor of Colorado, the governor of Colorado, excuse me, just going crazy. And I think Steve hit on it, man. What made the promo work was it was real. And I think another thing people forget is in the interim between the last time we saw Goldberg on WWE TV, he's had plenty of practice with public speaking, whether you're talking about his podcast or hosting, you know, various TV shows or being in movies. Like, this is a different Goldberg that's had a chance to evolve in terms of his speaking talent. So I think when you put those two together, you know, you give him time to talk, you give him a real, genuine, authentic story to get across to the people. And, you know, I loved it. You know, he's like, you know, Brock, not only are you next, but, you know, you're last. And I thought, man, that was great. There's no way that WWE can bungle this, man. This is going to be great. I wasn't excited for the match going into this, but this has sold me. This is going to be great. And then we get last night. Or Monday night. That's how bad it was. It feels like it was last night. with just, I don't know what they were thinking. Like, Brock Lesnar, as we know, has limited dates. And those dates are a valuable commodity. And this is what you spent one of those dates on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Making Dean Ambrose's words seem a little truth to them, huh? Like, right. He was saying he was lazy and didn't really care much. And he was trying to put on a great match and he didn't seem to care.
It'll be the match itself is gonna be really interesting in Survivor Series. I mean, I don't think we're gonna see Goldberg just get suplexed 15 times. And I've been of the belief that Brock should never lose any of these matches until they find the guy that they want to beat him. But I don't know. You kind of have to have Goldberg win this match, right?
I have no idea, which is why I'm so excited now. I'm even more excited than I was before, yeah. And I actually like the fact that the Lesnar stuff was like just ridiculous, crazy television. Because it adds a little more intrigue to it. Wow, why is Lesnar getting cheered in his hometown, pretty much, where he went to school 5 miles down the road? Right. And we brought him back there previous times because we knew he was going to get a huge pop. I don't get it.
I'm so mad! All right, so we'll see. We'll chronicle this feud further as we get closer to Survivor Series in a couple weeks. So right now, though, we're going to take a break. And speaking of tricks and treats here on Halloween... Oh boy, TNA, lots of tricks, not many treats going on in the world of Impact, but we'll cover that when we come back. But first, take a listen to our all-new break, by the way.
What?
Yeah, checking out the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed and the pop feed. We'll be right back. Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceOfNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceOfNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing grass. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up.
We're back on Clotheslines and Headlines. You got the Godfather, you got JR, and of course you got Steve, don't call me Bartman Willie, doing it big this
I think
week.
You mean Bartman, do the Bartman, dude, TJ Perkins.
That was such a great song, rest in peace Michael Jackson. speaking of rest in peace, and speaking of 10, because this is episode 10 of Clotheslines and Headlines, I don't know if you fellas realize that the Roman numeral for 10 is X, which ties into TNA in a variety of ways, because obviously the X division was the backbone of this company for many years. And now it seems like one of the principals involved with TNA may be getting X'd out. At least that's what will happen if one of the other side gets their way. And this has been one of the biggest ongoing stories in the month of October, the fate of TNA, which almost cost them Bound for Glory and the Great War. But let's go from the Great War in the ring, JR, to a Great War in the courtroom that was not nearly as entertaining as the broken brilliance of Matt Hardy.
Do you find it ironic that the big hot catchphrase of TNA is delete, and that's exactly what's about to happen to this company? After all this time, they're finally going to get deleted.
Be Matt Hardy's newest catchphrase. Insolvent! Insolvent! Insolvent!
Tax lien! So they had a little courtroom showdown today. Injunction filed, and they had a meeting over it. And our buddy Nate Rao over at TheTennessean.com was live tweeting the whole thing. And I have his summary here. I'm going to read through it. So full credit to him, Tennessean.com. Billy Corgan is either the white knight who kept TNA wrestling alive when it couldn't afford to tape new episodes of his weekly program, or is it predatory loan shark who embarked on a diabolical scheme to take control of a Nashville-based promotion? There you go. Those are the opposing views offered up by lawyers in a Nashville courtroom on Wednesday in the lawsuit pitting Corgan against TNA and the chairwoman of its board, Dixie Carter. Corgan, best known as a frontman for the Smashing Pumpkins, but he invested in and helped run wrestling promotions and began at TNA in 2015. Carter, who unlike Corgan was in the courtroom Wednesday, has run TNA for several years. The hearing played out like an intriguing professional wrestling match with control of the company hanging in the balance. They should have thrown Ray and Eddie's kid in here for shits and giggles. Corgan's attorney, Scott Sims, argued that his client staved off creditors and gave TNA the cash flow, not Flow Sports or Flow Slam, it needed to pay for production on two occasions. As part of those loan deals, Corgan rose to the title of president, but he wasn't given operating control of TNA. For the third loan, Corgan entered into a loan agreement with Carter in which he would gain her board of directors voting rights. 92. This sounds like a Silicon Valley storyline. Gain her board of directors voting rights, 92.5%, if the company becomes insolvent. In court Wednesday, Sims argued that TNA was indeed insolvent and fails the cash flow test because it can't pay any bills. These are two legal questions in front of Chancellor Ellen Hobbs Lyle, who is considering it's like the female version of the judge from My Cousin Vinny. That's how I picture Fred Gwynn, who is considering whether or not to grant a temporary injunction that would effectively grant control of TNA to Corgan. The first is whether such a loan agreement is legal under Tennessee law. The second is whether TNA is indeed insolvent. Lionel Hutz, the attorney for TNA, claimed that such loan agreements are not legal, and therefore the Travis Parham, TNA attorney, claimed that such loan agreements are not legal, and therefore the question of insolvency is not as moot. Forget it, buddy, you're out. Parham,
it just cracks me. I gotta interrupt. Like the agreement that we as a company gave to Billy Corgan is illegal.
It's my big rant, blah, blah, blah. And as you can see, my client is innocent. You know, all right. So he argued that Corgan held TNA and Carter over the barrel in order to access the cash he was offering. He said Corgan offered lending terms that would make a loan shark blush. Financial details on the lawsuit have been redacted, and under Hobbs Lyle's orders, the attorneys carefully did not cite dollar figures or other details in court on Wednesday. Parham also argued that even if Corgan's loan agreement is legal, TNA is not insolvent. The company is facing a long-anticipated cash flow problem, but has fielded lucrative offers. The WWE, the largest promotion in the world, is among those that have made offers. Anthem, a Toronto-based company that owns the licensing rights to TNA's lucrative video company, a library, said through an attorney on Wednesday, it is willing to pay off Corgan's loan minus the transaction fee he's due. Anthem is a senior creditor for TNA and is a member of the ownership group. Hobbs Lyle said he'll issue her opinion on Monday. If Corgan wins, he'll take the reins of TNA. If he loses, it's most likely he'll pursue other legal battles and face the prospect of having his loan paid off with interest. Corgan's able to convert the debt he's owed to equity of the company up to 36%. Now, the worst part of all this is that the next set of Impact tapings has been postponed due to lack of funds, including total nonstop deletion at the Hardy compound and not the full episodes of Impact with an audience. Now, other rumors are out there saying that the Hardys are balking, basically saying if we don't get paid, you can't come to our house to play. So lots going on, lots to digest. Nate Milton, our TNA guru, what are your thoughts on this whole shenanigan-based nonsense?
Oh, well, I will add a third option for Billy Corgan, other than the previous two you had read, you know, either the White Knight or the Diabolical Mastermind. I will say Money Mark. That is what I think Billy got himself into. Like, I think this is a situation where he didn't do his due diligence. Either he didn't do his due diligence or they outright lied to him. Because I don't know how anybody would enter into an agreement without knowing where they stood. And it sounds like they gave him a position with no power. You know, they gave him a title with no teeth. And so all the good that Billy's done, you know, and I'm not Billy Corgan, Mark. I'm not the biggest Billy Corgan fan. But in terms of what he's done for this company since stepping in, you know, whether it's giving him loans or whether it's going on ESPN radio and promoting TNA or whether it's, you know, access to mainstream outlets like Variety or Rolling Stone that TNA would not have if not for Billy Corgan. You know, you can only give him credit for that. But it seems like either Dixie and her people weren't forthright with him or he went in extremely naive to this deal. And so, you know, I've been saying it forever, man. Like, Dixie Carter needs to go. She's needed to go for a long time. There are reports, and, you know, I don't have 100% authentication is the word that I'm trying to say, but it got deleted in my throat. You know, I don't have 100% verification on this, but when they were going through their new TV deal after getting the boot from Destination America, WGN was one of the suitors, or at least one of the people they were talking to. And apparently Billy Corgan had something set up, something lined up, and Dixie came in and screwed that up. And this is after she screwed up the Spike deal by bringing Russo back in under the table. So to me, Dixie Carter, for all...
She's a dipshit.
Yeah, for everything that she did in the formative years of TNA, or should I say everything her parents did in the formative years of TNA, she has been nothing but trouble for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And she needs to go.
I mean, Corgan clearly is just a big mark. I mean, there's no way he's a loan shark. No, this is such a horseshit scheme. No real loan shark that is, like, preying on people is going to this fucking nonsensical scenario, right? I mean, this is a circus. It's a clown show. Anyone who did 15 minutes of research knew that this was a mess. no one actually could have expected to make money back off of this. He clearly was paying in because he loves the promotion, loves wrestling, wanted the show to go on, and wants to be the boss. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's obvious. Hopefully, Ms. Lyle realizes that, and I'm rooting for Billy in the scenario because, like you said, Dixie just needs to go. So it's like, I don't know how you can look at this and really look at him as any kind of predator. I mean, no loan shark that's any good is going into this disaster of a situation.
I had lots of hot takes regarding this situation.
Scorching
hot takes, but I have to give the Tennessee in this. Nate, are you doing any traveling coming up?
I am not.
Okay, because and Justin, you do some traveling. I'm ordering you a picture of attorney Scott Sims that is in the article. You can buy prints of it.
Ooh.
And since Billy Corgan's lawyer, and I'm thinking of getting you a photo luggage tag, $14.95 at the Tennessean right now.
I could use a new one, so thank you.
Yeah, no problem. A nice picture of Billy Corgan's attorney. That's all I got to say.
I mean,
no, it's a joke. I mean, I'm probably not the first one to make this comment, but Impact is on tomorrow, the day after we tape this, the day probably that this will come out. They should just put this on for the 2 hours. Paint up Scott Sims' face like Jeff, like Brother Nero. Make Dixie's lawyer get his hair up like Matt, like brother Matt, and let's just show this instead of Impact. If they're going to be delaying the tapings, that will give them an extra week. It'll buy them an extra week. You put on tomorrow's show the next week, and it'll be good. The one question I do have, which was kind of confusing to me, when they had this huge set of tapings after Bound for Glory, it was like I believe 4 days worth, maybe 3 or 4 days worth. It seemed like they had enough shows in the can to make it through December, and the talk was that the next taping, so then this was from their mouth, was going to be in January. So yeah. And all of a sudden today they come out like, oh, we're postponing the next taping.
Well, I think it's all the Hardy stuff. I think that was the taping.
They never said anything about that. It was like stuff on the sheet. So it was like, is this just like that one Hardy thing? Whatever was going to be going on with that.
It seems like that's what it was. That it was the Hardy tapings.
So we're talking 1 day with no crowd, maybe 2 days with no crowd.
Right. And I'm sure they were going to bring a bunch of talent if they were going to do the whole show. So
mm-hmm.
It was obviously cost. So here we are again. The end of another year. The question we always ask, right? Will TNA be here a year from now? I mean, when is this when is it going to end? When is it going to end? It just doesn't end. It just keeps going and going. And every time you think it's almost over, like I'm waiting for like the courthouse to explode on Monday, right? Before they're about to, like something stupid is going to go down to keep this thing going because it just will not die, any of it. And, Corgan, for all the money and bullshit he spent on this, like could have just opened his own promotion like 2 years ago and been just as big, if not bigger than TNA probably right now. I mean, the talent is even starting to ask what's going on. Like Moose tweeted earlier, like, does anyone have any answers? What's going on? Maria was sharing the Twitter of the Tennessean reporter, saying, is everyone following this? So, I mean, they're starting to mouth off basically and not towing the company line anymore. So, I mean, things are getting ugly. It's real shitty, too, if Dixie just, like, after all this, just sells. Just so, and Corgan gets paid, and it just is what it is. Like, it's, you act like you love the company so much, and now you have the chance to either let it go and just bow out or bury it. And it looks like she's leaning towards burying it if she can.
Yeah, and I think there was a time, again, going back 5-6 years, that Dixie could have sold most of her share of TNA and kind of just been this figurehead of this strong woman in a male-dominated sport.
Right.
A nasty woman, to use Trump's words. and that would have been fine, even though, it's all phony, it's all fake. That would have been a good PR story.
Right.
But because she has been so entrenched in this, it feels like, man, she is going down with the ship. It's like, if I can't have it, nobody will. And I think the ironic part is, even if Billy Corgan finds a way to take control of this company, TNA's probably dead, because the smart thing for him to do would be to sell off the tape library to Vince McMahon and just rebrand the company. So TNA as we know it would cease to exist even if Billy wins, I think.
Maria Canales also just tweeted while we're taping this, no matter what, my husband and I aren't out of a job. The only end is if we quit, but we won't. We continue to make things happen. Hashtag never give up. But,
and then she tweeted, JT, come on by. You're only about 15 minutes away.
Yeah, but you got to get on the Cubs bandwagon. She's a big Cubs fan.
I'll root for whoever.
All right. Sounds good. I mean, she's right in your neck of the woods.
She's like, yeah, not that far.
Yeah, take her and Mike out to Boneheads.
I see her tags on Instagram when I see when she posts Providence, Rhode Island. I'm like, so close. so close yet so far away.
This reminds me of when you were kind of towards the end of the Kevin Kelly show, which you can check out right on the Kevin
archives.
Kelly show. Yeah, it's all in the archives. It's on the Place to Be a Nation, Place to Be Nation Wrestling archives as well. You used to take bets each episode whether Daniel Bryan would show up at WrestleMania or Hulk Hogan would take up at WrestleMania, and this is going to be it. Like we've started to say that she's show. You know what's going to happen with them. Here we are again.
Here we are again.
And it's a good show right now. It's been really good.
Yeah. Just like WCW in its final days. So anyway, we'll continue to follow the story as the news breaks. I'm sure in 2 weeks there'll be something even stupider.
Hey, I hate to be that guy real quick, though. I hate to be that guy. But, let's just say if this company does crash and burn or end up getting sold to Billy and rebranded, at least we avoid the WCW fate of the black guy being the world champ when it closes. So you can't blame Lashley on this one.
That's right. That's right. It's let it go, Dixie. Just let it go. So anyway, PlayStation.com, like Steve mentioned, by the way, you heard about all the feeds on all our breaks. We're going to hear about the Pro Wrestling Only feed in a moment. And on that feed tonight, dropped the newest letters from Kayfabe. So check that out. Episode 8, my favorite podcast going right now. We have all our usual. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, number 8.
Your favorite podcast? Babe. Well, we're doing. I thought this was your favorite podcast.
I said one of my favorite podcasts.
Oh, okay. Now. Okay. I take it back then.
Jesus, call off feelings. The dogs. Your team's winning. You should be happy. PlayStation.com has plenty each and every day, written and podcast. We continued our network adventure series this week. Our Scott and I's Vintage Vault refreshes. Brian Bayless every Tuesday has your Raw recap. We have our NFL The Huddle series, where a bunch of us get together and talk about that week's games. Wednesday Walk Around the Web with Glenn Butler. Always a great read. So plenty of stuff to check out in the world of wrestling, in the world of comics, world of sports and entertainment. We keep you going. We're all across social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. We have those iTunes feeds like you've heard throughout the show tonight. PlayStation Nation Wrestling, PlayStation Nation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, and The Kevin Kelly Show. Subscribe. Kevin Kelly shows us the archives, obviously not live anymore, but the other three are updated almost daily with new podcasts. So check all of those out at PlayStation.com. The only place you can get pop culture world. And if you're doing any shopping online with the holidays coming, PlayStation.com/Amazon is the link you should be using to help us out as well. So with that said, boys, why don't we take a break? We're going to come back. Chad Campbell going to be here. We're going to talk some Japan, all of Japan wrestling, Japanese wrestling. We're going to go across the whole country. We're going to talk Noah. We're going to talk Dragon Gate. We're going to talk New Japan, all Japan. It's all coming at you. We'll be right back after this break.
Yo, hey, what's happening, dude? I'm a guy with a rep for being wherever I go. It's not intentional, just keeping the flow. Picks and test scores to get the best scores. Dropping banana peels all over the floor. I'm the kid that made you think with C and R. Last name Simpson, first name Bart.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
I don't believe this. I get rid of those two evil maniacs who try to ruin my show. And I get two evil guests who are trying to ruin my show.
Fang, just who came up with the stupid idea of giving Space Ghost a talk show in the first place?
How they gave his own show to Tad Ghostal. Any given second he could go mad postal. Stay waving that power band space cannon and had the nerve.
We are back. Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 10. And if you're like me and you're cheering on the Cubs, you're wearing your 1984 throwback Leon Durham jersey. Also seen in the greatest movie of all time, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I hope you enjoyed the Pro Wrestling Only, the new break. My favorite show on there, one of my favorites, Letters from Kayfabe. Just dropped a new one.
It's my favorite, actually. My favorite.
I'm joking, calling back to Justin, but it is actually one of my favorite podcasts. I wasn't sure about it, and I just listened to the 7th episode on the way home, and Justin's got a little events center on it, and I kind of dig that segment.
And a sneak preview in the next month or so, you might hear me on a full episode.
Wow, I gotta send them another thing. I hear this Chadley Kriscola guy is pretty over. And
Connecticut.
Yes. Speaking of a Chadley, we have on with us right now, probably my go-to guy. If I have a question about wrestling, if I want an opinion, if I want an actual hot take, I go to my main man from Atlanta, who I'm listening to right now, John Smoltz. We'll bring you back some nostalgia for you, Chad, of the days of yore. Chad Campbell, how you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, I hope the Cubs smash the Indians like we did in 1995. We can always hold on to 1995.
He's a Chad's a real voice of wrestling around here, so it's great to have him on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Heavy hit so far.
My goodness. We're all about the puns here on Clotheslines and Headlines. Yeah. Chad, we originally going to talk.
Well, I mean, like I always say, I just straight shoot, so,
Yeah. Oh, my. Got some PTSD from listening to that show back
in
the...
Never wrestle with those words that you have in your mouth.
Yeah. I did that one, man. So, Chad, we're going to have you on. We were originally just going to talk some New Japan, but there is just a lot of stuff going on in the world of Japanese wrestling. I know some people might not want to hear that, but I think most of the people who are tuning in the show do want to hear about wrestling outside of WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, and that's why we have you here. First off, I know we wanted to talk a little bit about the road to Power Struggle, which is some of these names.
Wait, I thought we talked about TNA last segment.
Oh, man. Are we taping in order here? No. But, some people don't want to hear the Japan stuff, and I think they're sad. And I think that's what I like about this show is that we can touch upon some of these outside promotions and get people excited. And I kind of see it as like a gateway to some of the pro wrestling only stuff too, which will go into a deeper dive of these promotions. So Chad, we were going to talk a little bit about New Japan. They have the Road to Power Struggle, which is coming up, I believe, on – is it November 5th that it is the date? I'm trying to call it up as we
speak
right
now. That is actually the main
– the actual Power Struggle show. Yeah.
That is the road has ended and we're at Power Struggle on November the 5th. But they just did that show that was on New Japan World on the 21st. That one was the first round of the Junior Tag League. And then the semifinals is on October 30th, which is also on New Japan World and also from Cork, and which is kind of weird that they're having those two shows 9 days apart. Both in Corican, but those are kind of the two main shows leading into the big show on November 5th.
Now, I was really excited. We talked about with Pete Schumacher last show about the Junior Tag Team Championship. I loved that last year. It was I thought it was a really good mix of talent, and I got to be honest, I didn't even get to talk to you about this. This was not as impressive to me as last year. There were some interesting choices, but what were your thoughts overall about Junior Tag League? It was kind of split up into a couple nights so far.
Yeah, I thought the first round. So on that October 21st show, we got three of the four first round matches. We didn't get the Ricochet match. They announced he had some travel issues. Which, with if you've been following what's been going on with Where in the World is Matt Sydal, that was a little concerning when they announced that. But he was found and okay. So they actually had that match on the 25th on a show that's not on New Japan World. That first round match, and Ricochet and David Finlay ended up winning that. They defeated Will Ospreay and Ghetto. But the other first-round matches, I thought they were fun. Really, the only one that I thought was very good was the ACH and Taiji Ishimori versus Young Bucks match. I enjoyed that one a good deal.
Yes. Yeah,
I thought that was a good showing for the Young Bucks to have kind of a serious match, and I was also surprised at the end result as ACH and Taji won, and now they are facing David Finlay and Ricochet in the semifinals. The other semifinal was Roppongi Vice, which they're kind of – I kind of don't know what's going on with them because they're having a sort of weird angle where they're bickering with each other. So I don't know if they're setting up a split for them or not, but they're not exactly on the same page in their tag matches. But they were able to advance over the Lucha duo of Titan and Angel del Oro. And they're facing Fuego and Risuke Taguchi, which I don't know what you think about that tag team, but a lot of comedy going on with those two guys.
Yeah, I like that after Taguchi was doing Fuego's dance, he was completely blown up afterwards. And I don't know how much of it was him joking around or how much of it was – I mean, he was heaving. Like, he was kind of in the corner during the other introductions. Like, I took the little notes. I said they look kind of like the cast of Dumb and Dumber at my kids' elementary school dance.
Yeah, Fuego to me, like, I don't – his ring attire, he looks straight up like 1995 Randy Savage in WCW. Like the jacket with the long tassels hanging down and the cowboy hat. It was quite a scene. So I don't – I mean, I guess, do you want to give your predictions on who you think is going to advance from those two semifinals? I'm a little up in the air. I do think Fuego and Taguchi are advancing into the finals. I feel pretty confident about that.
And you know, they've had a lot of these Noah New Japan matchups, and Finlay Ricochet is just an odd team for me to be going on to the final. But so I think it's going to be ACH and Ishimori. It was very surprising to me to see ACH in the middle of a New Japan ring ending a show in a main event.
Right, yeah.
So I think that based on the placement of that and the way you know, the crowd reacted, and Ishimori has been a really fun addition, seeing him being able to see more of his matches. I think that they might go there, but who do I know? I was ready for Roppongi Vice to lose.
Yeah, me too. I was really surprised. Yeah, I was surprised they won. I think I may actually go with Finlay Ricochet just to be different. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that the semifinals will. I think both of those could produce two good matches, especially Finlay and Ricochet versus ACH and Ishimori. I think that should be very good, and that's main event. And, so hopefully that'll kind of pick it up. Like I said, the first round, you know, I thought it was fun, but really of the three matches we've seen, only the top match was the one to kind of go out of your way to see.
And the actual power struggle card, too, is interesting because the really the last couple months when you'd have Los Ingobernables, oh, man, I so know how to say this, too, Ingobernables. Hook me up, Chad. Help me here.
Los Ingobernables de Japón.
Yes, and I can speak Spanish, and I still screwed it up. They were pretty much in four-way matches almost exclusively, and then as we go to Power Struggle, they are just dominating the top of the card in four singles matches. Why don't we go through those a little bit?
Yeah, so it's an interesting card that's announced so far. So you have the tag title match, which is the Guerrillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tongaroa, basically Haku's sons, versus Chaos team of Tomohiro Ishii and Yoshihashi. Not much to go on that. I feel like it'll be an easy win for the Guerrillas of Destiny, and we'll see who they face at Wrestle Kingdom. And then also the big World Tag League. They're probably gearing up for a deep run in that in December. Then you have Bushi versus Kushida for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. That's kind of an interesting match because Bushi beat Kushida for the belt at Destruction in Tokyo about a month ago. So I would think they wouldn't switch the belt back so quickly, but they honestly could. I was surprised Bushi won in the first place.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprise out of nowhere.
I kind of don't that to me of the card announced is the one result that's most up in the air, because the next three matches they've announced, kind of the top three matches of the card, I think they'll all be very good matches. but I also think the result is pretty predictable. And this is kind of one of the problems with New Japan is mm-hmm. right after the G1, and especially after when the G1 ends, you kind of know what's going to be your Wrestle Kingdom main event, right, just in the way it's happening. But especially after King of Pro Wrestling, it seems pretty obvious then what will be the undercard or a lot of the main matches underneath that. So this kind of plays off of that, where you have Shibata versus Evil for the NEVER Championship. I feel like that's going to be a pretty easy victory for Shibata. Tanahashi versus Sonata, which is a very interesting match. They had a very good match in the G1 Climax. But again, I feel like Tanahashi will end up winning in the G1 match. Sonata won, so this is a way for Tanahashi to get his win back. But will be interesting to see how effective Tanahashi is here, because since the G1, he has been taking it very easy. So this is really his biggest match since August. His first kind of marquee singles match where he is going to have to go out there and perform. If you watch New Japan regularly, it's pretty easy to see Tanahashi kind of hiding out in the tags and the multi-mans.
Yep. A lot of multi-man matches.
Right. Taking it pretty easy. Even on bigger cards like the King of Pro Wrestling card, he was in a multi-man. So this was one where he's going to have to ramp it up. He usually gives a very good performance in those type of big matches. We'll see if he can do it again versus Sonata. And then the main event is actually kind of a shocking match.
Yes, it is.
Originally was supposed to be Naito versus Michael Elgin. Naito defeated Elgin for the mm-hmm. Intercontinental Championship. But with Elgin injured, they have slotted in Jay Lethal, who is main eventing a big show in New Japan.
And he was... You know, in ROH, it was when the split started to happen, and when Lethal turned face, you know, that was on Ring of Honor television. They had a match in United States and now back to Japan. But when Jay was over in Japan a couple of times this year, he was really low on the card.
Right.
You know, he had like one ROH match. He was in a few tags, but pretty low on the card. And then it's kind of like the shock of seeing ACH in a main event, seeing Jay Lethal in a main event. I guess a little less surprising than ACH, but still.
Yeah, to me it's a surprise. I mean, because, yeah, like he was presented as kind of one of those, a couple years ago they had the NWA champion that would come in for some of their shows and stuff like right. that. And honestly, he was presented kind of at that level, like your third match of the card. Here's the ROH champion doing a token defense.
Rob Conway or a Big Daddy Yum Yum.
Right. Having a 10 to 12 minute match, and that was it. And also, I mean, like you said, the angle happened in Ring of Honor for their split. So it's a little confusing for the Japanese fans in that. Now these two are pitted against each other and rivals, because if you haven't been following what's been happening in Ring of Honor, they kind of still seem aligned. But this show has already sold out. So I think that really speaks highly to Naito. Now, they're not running Sumo Hall. I'm not positive what the capacity is for this show, but... But yeah, I mean, I was surprised it sold out this far in advance, and I think that's a good feather in the cap of Naito.
So what is more likely to happen, Trump beating Clinton or Lethal beating Naito?
Let's see. I think Naito would probably literally have to have a heart attack and die inside the ring for Lethal to win. But, I mean, given Hillary's medical state, I don't know.
So you're saying Jay Lethal doesn't have the stamina? Is that what you're saying, Chad?
I don't know. I guess I'd actually have to go with Trump as much as I don't want to, because there is a track record there. There's a slight possibility she might not make it.
Let's go around the horn a little bit. We've really never talked. We had a plan on talking Dragon Gate in the past. And, man, Dragon Gate is a promotion that I was all in like 06, 07, 08. Kind of especially when they expanded to the U.S. for a little bit. But I have been completely out of the loop. So I'm glad to hear that they have had some really great matches this year. and I'm intrigued to get back into it. And you want to talk a little bit about Tozawa, a man who made his presence felt on the Cruiserweight Classic enough that he's going to be leaving and getting his shot in America for the second time since his very successful excursion back in, like, '10. Man, it's going to be interesting when we look back on this century, what we're going to be calling these years. I'll say 2010.
Yeah, well, you know, some people say the aughts. Is that all of the 2000s, or is that just 2000 to 2009? Yeah, that don't make sense. But yeah, so Tozawa's finishing up. And I'll just say quickly on Dragon Gate, to me, this has been the most interested I've been in the company since maybe 2011. When they had the Blood Warriors faction, which I really liked as a heel faction. But I mean, honestly, it could be as far back as, like, the Crazy Max days. Like, it's possible, because I'm all in right now.
Like the Florida Brothers and all.
Yeah, I love the Florida Brothers. I'm so glad you know that. Oh, man, the Florida Brothers are so great. But they also have a big show on November the 3rd, it's called The Gate of Destiny, and it's in Osaka, which, you know, is probably the hottest crowd in Japan for all the promotions, both New Japan and Dragon Gate. Osaka's just been a great crowd for the past few years with great heat, and this will be Tozawa's final match. This is actually, in the Dragon Gate echelon, this is probably, I would say, maybe the fourth or fifth biggest show of the year, something around there. So it's a pretty big show. But in the final match, there's six people announced. It's Tozawa, Masato Yoshino, Naruki Doi, Shingo Takagi, Yamato, and BB Hulk. And they don't announce, they're going to be a six-man tag, but they don't announce who's on whose team until the day of the show. And it's decided by Doi Darts, which is exactly what it sounds like, where Naruki Doi brings out a big dartboard and basically selects the teams that way.
Oh, God, I got to get back into this. This is right up my alley.
Yeah, this is probably Doi Darts just kind of happened about the time you sort of drifted out, Steve, and now it's one of those kind of like the Dead or Alive cage match, how that's sort of like a cult favorite for Dragon Gate fans. Well, the Doi Dart match is also a big favorite of the Dragon Gate contingent, but it's really interesting with this match because you have Tozawa, Yoshino, Doi just got kicked out of the biggest heel faction in Dragon Gate Berserk. So now he's kind of a face, I would assume. Yamato and BB Hulk are all faces in the promotion. And then you have Shingo, who is the ultimate, like, uber heel in the entire promotion. So I don't really know how the teams will shake out, but it should be a great match. And, certainly emotional at the end of that match. Anybody that's seen U-Haul Nation or Apollo Crews' graduation is what they call it when he left Dragon Gate, I'm sure you should be expecting something with Tozawa, which is a really emotional time with everybody crying. And even though, you know, I don't speak Japanese, it's a very kind of touching scene and worth watching.
Well, and especially with Tozawa, has been there for so long, really, since he was, you know, more or less a young boy. And seeing his, you know, Yuha Nation wasn't even there that long. And when he, I don't know if you saw, Chad, when he reunited Tozawa with Apollo Crews when he got to Florida, it's worth looking up that video because they were just trying to cut a promo and Tozawa just started crying because he was so happy to see his best friend. It was cutest thing.
Yeah, Tozawa, when you all left, like, Tozawa was just in complete tears. And I should mention the six people in this match are kind of what they call, like, the six pillars of the promotion. All those guys are people that came on sort of in a generation after your Simas and like Don Fuji's, and Dragon Kid. So these have been sort of the six focal points of the promotion along with SEMA since really about 2006, 2007 or so. So a lot of history here, I think it'll be a great match, and that whole card is great because you have Ida, who's an exciting young wrestler, facing off against Flamita, and I think that should just be a fabulous match as well. So that's a show to kind of seek out.
Yeah, that's blowing up their feud, if correct?
Yeah, that should be that's kind of one of the bigger matches of that kind of feud. They've been in some tags and stuff, so this is sort of their first marquee singles match. And I expect Ida to win, but it should be a really great match because you have the wrestling kind of technical ability of Ida versus Flamita, who's one of the best high flyers in the world.
And, Chad, you had a couple other little news notes, tidbits here before we wrap up for the year?
A couple of kernels. Noah had a new GHC champion, which was Nakajima. He defeated Shigura, which I think was a good call. And he's actually started talking and issuing challenges to Miyahara, who's the Triple Crown champion, and also to Okada. Which is kind of interesting. So I don't know where that's leading, whether they'll have any matches. But, I mean, him issuing the challenge, it seems like it should be leading somewhere. So that was kind of weird that he did that. And also on that card, Shibata beated Go Shiozaki, which you think may have blown off that part of the New Japan versus Noah feud. But after the match, they had another big melee. Shiozaki said this wasn't over, blah, blah, blah. So I definitely think we'll see Shibata versus Shiozaki for the NEVER title at Wrestle Kingdom. I think that's where that's leading. And then so that's kind of what's going on the Noah front. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was All Japan. They're having their biggest card of the year, the Sumo Hall Show, on November 27th, so it's about a month away. But they've started a match, announcing a good many matchups for it. And I just wanted to read all some of these matchups for you, Steve, because they are wild. here is a couple of the marquee ones. So you have Isami Kodaka, who is he does hardcore stuff for Big Japan, and also a real kind of dingy promotion called Freedoms. But he also has some technical ability. But he's teaming up with the Great Kabuki at the spry age of, I think, 67 years old.
Wow. And, probably still scary.
Yeah, Yutuka Yoshi. Are you familiar with him, Steve?
No, I am not.
A big, fat, kind of jolly man is Yutuki Yoshi and Osamu Nishimura, who was a kind of a stalwart in New Japan in the 2000s, a very technical man. So that's one side of the team. But listen to who they're facing. Tajiri, Chavo Guerrero Sr.
Classic.
Yes, Chavo Classic. Ultimo Dragon. And then Dory Funk Jr.
Oh my God.
Who is wrestling at the age of 75. He'll be 75 in that match. So that I don't know what that match is going to look like, but that sounds like a lot of fun. And then in the very next match after that, Onita and Masafuchi are teaming up to go after the All Asia Tag Team Championship. So there's a lot of in some ways, I think it's actually kind of brilliant how they built this card because, I mean, it's All Japan, who's been pretty poor attendance-wise in the past decade. So they really built up this card with, like, a good bit of nostalgia, like that tag match, and then a lot of their big guys in the upper matches, like the main event of that show is Kento Miyahara versus Suwama for the Triple Crown. So pretty interesting card and just a lot of kind of guys that you can't believe are still wrestling involved in that show.
Yeah, pretty much every single one of them.
Yeah. All they need is like Fujiwara to come out there and put somebody in an arm bar and they'll be set.
Well, Chad, as always, we greatly appreciate you appearing with us. Anything you've been working on lately besides Where the Big Boys Play, which is amazing and awesome as always?
I will give a shout out to the Match of the Week Club. It kind of follows the same line here of what I talked about today, where we're going outside of the WWE bubble for one match a week that we try to find. We try to link you the match right there in the post, and then there's a good collection of guys that give their thoughts on the match that we're watching. And we try to stay fairly mainstream. Like I mentioned, Freedoms as a promotion before. I would think it would be rare that we pick a Freedoms match to watch. So, I mean, if we're picking Japan, it's going to be mostly All Japan, New Japan, Noah, Dragon Gate, kind of the four big promotions you're familiar with. If it's Lucha, it's probably going to be CMLL, or Lucha Liga Elite, which is the match we're have upcoming this week, which is Caristico or Mystico versus LA Park, La Parca, and a very bloody cage match. So check that out every Friday on placetobenation.com.
It's a great gateway drug. If you're tired of the same old, like, check this out. It is an outstanding column. Excited to see what happens each week on it. And hey, you know, as long as we're plugging, keep your eyes out for the reemergence of the Live Watch after a summer break. And I'm going to be with Jordan Duncan, Glenn Butler, and we are going to watch one of the most absurd matches of all time. So right up our alley. Keep an eye on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed for that. So, Chad, thank you again.
Lots of great kernels there, Chad.
My little nuggets of wisdom,
yes,
sir.
Nuggets, indeed. Speaking of kind of maybe obscure wrestling, I'm going to be at the XWA Breakout 16 on Saturday night in West Warwick, Rhode Island. I'll be there along with John D'Amato, Mr. Andy Flanagan, Roger the Cowboy Morissette, Dan McGinn, and Brian Bayless. Going to hit some boneheads. And then we're going to be at XWA. Some big matches announced so far. And, Chad, you can actually tell me these are really big. I don't know. JT Dunn against Zack Sabre Jr., which is the whole reason we're going to the show, is because Zack Sabre is going to be in the house. It was then announced that Mike Bennett's going to take on Matt Riddle. So I get to see Zack Sabre and Matt Riddle on the same night live. Get those two off the list. Anthony Henry versus Sean Carr. Ethan Case versus Papa Don. And then a couple other matches as they continue to reveal the card. Chad, what's kind of your match I should really keep an eye on that show?
Well, as I told you, I think that Riddle-Bennett match could be surprising because, I mean, Bennett is polarizing, but I like him. I like his punches especially. And I think Riddle is such an exciting grappler that if they take it to the mat in the early going, which I suspect they will, it'll be engaging and should be a lot of fun. I think they did a good job with that card in mixing up the Northeast talent like the Papa Dons. Along with kind of some of the buzzy indie guys like Anthony Henry, Riddle, and Sabre.
A little sad it wasn't Papa John when they first announced it, not gonna lie.
Yeah, I can't speak that I've ever seen Papa Don, but who knows?
Could have went for paying me, Papa. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that show. So I'll give a report in 2 weeks about how that goes, but it should be a lot of fun as always. And then I'll be watching Hell in a Cell with Mr. D'Amato here in the basement. So I'm looking forward to that as always. So Chad, thanks for joining. Only guest tonight, but that's okay. I think if we had another guest, we might have gone 5 hours. So we would have been maybe like a halfway through or between the sheets at this point. So we're doing well. As always, we're 10 episodes into Clotheslines and Headlines. Guys, it's been a really fun 20 weeks, I guess, 10 episodes. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about Hell in a Cell. We'll be previewing Survivor Series. Maybe we'll do some Thanksgiving thoughts as well. And then, of course, we'll see what's going on in the continuing sagas of TNA. Maybe we'll talk to Ring of Honor at that time, too. So, for Chadley Campbell, for Steve Willing, and the Godfather, Nate Milton, I'm JT Rosero. We're out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Be sure to check out everything else PlayStation has to offer during that time. Take care, everyone. Happy Halloween.
Go Cubs.
We better be going out to Thriller.
Yeah, no, we're not going out to it, but we heard it already.
All alone in the crib, watching the tube. Yo, is that what I did? Did I see something new? Chills on your spine, your heart goes to fright. Not filled by the pain, that gold bump in the night. And walk through the wall, with no time to stop. We're
you give a call, but trip and fall off and back to the place. Now it's no dream because you've seen a shadow in the night, but we will come and get it done, so don't worry, save your fright. Now there's a group who likes the truth, and you know you can trust us, so don't get nervous, cause at your service, the local Ghostbusters! To say, all by myself with no one around, did not understand a hand coming out the ground. I knew it wasn't mine, it was somebody else, but I didn't care, gee, I just need for help. Then Ghostbusters! Heads out to their back, screaming, Ghostbusters! Ghostbusters attack!
We are the friendly neighborhood Ghostbusters.
That's what they said to me.
We are the busters of any
G-H-O-S-T.
Yeah.